Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 19th of September. In about 2 weeks, every federal agency will be shut down unless Congress can reach an agreement to keep the government open. The Treasury Department is likely to run out of money to pay its bills sometime between late October and mid-November. And as you heard and have been hearing on the news for this week and a little bit before this week, there is an attempt to tie the two together, defund Obamacare with this potential shutdown of the government. Today, the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, said the House will pass a bill tomorrow to keep the government running while gutting Obama's health care law. He said the fight over here has been won. The fight over there in the Senate is just beginning. I expect my Senate colleagues to do everything they can to defund this law, just like the House is going to do. So we talk about all of this. This hour of the program, we'll have two guests with us, David Winston, who is president of the Winston Group and has done some recent polling on this, will be with us the first half hour of the program. And the second half hour, Jonathan Alter will join us. Jonathan has written a number of books, most recently The Center Holds, Obama and His Enemies. We'll be welcoming phone calls, as we always do. The phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And I should remind you that we are on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. David Winston has joined us many times on this program, president of the Winston Group, which is a strategic planning and survey research firm, formerly the director of planning for Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich, where he oversaw a number of initiatives. And David, thank you very much for joining us once again. Hello.
Hi, how are you? Glad to be here.
Yeah, nice to have you with us. Now, you've done some polling on this. What did you ask, and who did you ask it of?
Well, the question was really geared, and it was done at the end of July, beginning of August, when there have been a variety of statements made by some Republicans, sort of suggesting the idea that that in order to deal with the president's health care plan, that attaching it to the continuing resolution in terms of being able to fund the government, and if it meant that it would shut things down, then that would shut down the government because the government wouldn't be funded, that, in fact, that was a potential policy option. And so the way I worded the question was, some members of Congress have proposed shutting down the government as a way to defund the president's health care law. Do you favor or oppose that proposal? And what I got back was 23% favored that, 71% didn't. But perhaps more importantly, as looking within the Republican Party, 38% favored it and 53% opposed it. So even amongst Republicans, there was a pretty that was not a policy route that at least Republicans even wanted to go at this point.
So why are some Republicans going this route right now? Who are they?
Well, you've got a group that is. Well, let me start off with another element. The country is not necessarily particularly happy about the president's health care plan. When you look at most national polls, NBC, Wall Street Journal, Pew Research, USA Today, you see by about a 10-point margin, people disapprove rather than approve of the health care plan. And it's not like the country is wild about this particular plan. Having said that, for obvious reasons, the president is pretty tied to this. This is his initiative, and so it's going to be pretty difficult in this environment to be able to get him to completely change his mind. And so some have sort of viewed the idea of, well, what we'll do is we'll just attach it to the government actually being able to function or run, and perhaps he'll change his mind. He was pretty clear today in terms of response to what House Republicans said yesterday that he would veto this bill. So that's not likely a route that where it's going to go. But what you have is you have some people who this is how they think it'll play out, where you can overturn the president's health care plan.
Mm-hmm. The president also said yesterday, you've never seen in the history of the United States the debt ceiling or the threat of not raising the debt ceiling. That's another debate just a few weeks hence or next week. The threat of not raising the debt ceiling being used to extort a president or a governing party. Was he right about that, David?
Now, there have been other examples where that's occurred, and that's gone back to Reagan back in, actually even prior to Reagan, but one of the more visible times when Reagan first came in, there was some question in terms of raising the debt ceiling. It has been used, maybe not perhaps exactly in this particular way, but nonetheless, it's part of a legislative process, and legislators use the legislative process to try to get things that they want.
What is it about Obamacare that has some Republican members of the House and the Senate, but the House is really the ones leading the way here, so absolutely adamant to it and deciding to take this on is a really huge issue?
Well, this is sort of reflective of a bit where the country's at as well. There's some elements within that bill that I think the people, certainly Republicans in the House, but also the Senate. I mean, I would also suggest that, again, when you're talking about the individuals who have been sort of leading the way in terms of focusing on using the CR, the continuing resolution to defund the president's health care plan, has actually been Senator Lee and Senator Cruz of Texas. And so, yes, it's been somehow. So, but when you look at things, for example, and you heard small business owners talk about this yesterday, the idea that, for example, the amount of people they're going to have to reduce to 29 hours a week so they don't fall under this law, as opposed to perhaps they're at 35 to 40, you know, that's an example of things that people want to be able to change to make the healthcare system, not necessarily the president's healthcare law, but the healthcare system work better. And there are a variety of other examples of, you know, again, if you agree with exchanges, is that the right way to go? What about being able to purchase health care across state lines? There are a variety of issues out there that many Republicans feel that this went the wrong direction. Actually, a lot of folks in the country think went in the wrong direction as well. Having said that, the one argument that the president has in terms of defunding his health care plan is this idea that, okay, that a solution is not to go back to where we were.
Mm-hmm. Well,
And I think the country agrees with that, yeah, and that's why he's got some standing here in terms of, like, going back to where we were is not the answer. So, to some degree, what he's challenging Republicans to do is put their plan on the table. And if you remember recently, actually, Newt Gingrich up at the Republican National Committee meeting was very clear in saying to Republicans, if we're going to take on the president's health care plan, we better have one of our own.
Mm-hmm. And yet, you've got this whole plan about to be implemented in a large way in October. Of course, the administration isn't going to say, oh, of course, we'll defund this. You've got people planning this in states all over the country. It is the law. It was debated and debated and debated. Isn't it kind of ironic to have, you know, a couple weeks before the opening of the whole system for it to be defunded? It's not going to happen.
And I think that's the way the public is looking at it. Again, you know, they may not be happy about it, but, okay, the idea here is to govern, not to just shut everything down. So what can be done in an effective way to improve things? But I think one of the problems the president has had is he's had to, in certain cases, just basically suspend the law on his own. So, for example, for businesses who are supposed to, according to the law, begin to comply this October 1st, he said, well, let's put that off for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so, not surprisingly, Republicans came back and said, why don't we put the whole thing off for a year? And to which he then pushed back. And so you've heard that debate. And by the way, the public, when they hear that, kind of goes, oh, that doesn't seem unreasonable. Having said that, shutting down government is not, this is, at least from the public's point of view, the way to solve this, right? You know, the idea is, okay, two people get in a room and they talk to each other and they figure out a way to make it work, and that's what they're sort of expecting, both of Republicans and Democrats at this point. Sit down and negotiate, work this through, make it work, and don't make us, the public, the one that sort of has to take all the incoming. You know, you guys figure it out.
So who needs to negotiate? Does Boehner need to negotiate with that element of his party? Does the president need to negotiate with that element as well, or with Boehner? Or who needs to sit down and talk?
Well, if there's one error I think the president has clearly made, and this is when he sort of decided to go out there and said, I won't negotiate, because that's not what the public wants to hear either. He ends up sort of putting himself kind of in the same category as, again, Senator Cruz and Senator Lee, who are saying, no, you know, we just have to, even if, I mean, if we get to that point of shutting down the government, we have to hold firm in terms of the president's health care plan. Those two people want to see somehow their elected officials actually get to a conclusion that will actually make things go forward. And so when they hear statements like that from both sides, they just get very frustrated. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that you see reflected in a lot of these surveys is a frustration with just the political discourse that's occurring in this country. Mm-hmm. And to a large degree, being driven by those attitudes, sort of my way or the highway. Mm-hmm. And people don't see that as an effective doctrine to govern the country.
Mm-hmm. So give me an outline of what will happen. The news reports today, David, are indicating that a shutdown of the government looks even more likely today. It's sort of hard to see what kind of strategy will be followed that will allow for any compromise.
Well, let me sort of potential sequence of events. So the first sequence is the House is now going to pass this, okay? And this is the continuing resolution, disfunding the government at the levels that it's at, with the exception of funding the president's health care plan. And so that'll go to the Senate. The expectation is what the Senate's going to do is they will pass the CR, but it's a clean CR, taking out the element that the Republicans in the House put in terms of defunding the president's health care plan, then it will go to conference, okay, where you'll finally begin to see, okay, what are the real differences between the two sides and how does a potential negotiation sort of proceed from there. The other thing that might happen is if that takes long enough, you might see both sides say, okay, let's pass a bill to just continue things for 15 days or 30 days to at least give themselves some time. That's possible as well, so people should be on the lookout for that. But then in the middle of all this, right, then suddenly you have the debt ceiling sort
right.
of pop into the middle of this. And to some degree, given all the discussion that's been about this and the continuing resolution, it's just going to be another complicating factor. So I think at this point what you're seeing is not so much that people's expectations that things are going to shut down. I think what I think people are concerned about is they don't see where the deal is.
Mm-hmm.
They don't see where the compromise is how that's going to evolve, and they don't see one at this point. And I think that's what's making everybody nervous. And by the way, rightfully so. I mean, because mm-hmm. it is not clear where that compromise is at this point.
Now, tell me about this. The debt ceiling debate, which is coming up very soon as well, there is a separate provision there that's not in the government shutdown provision, which the Republicans have inserted, calling for tax reform and federal approval of the Keystone XL crude oil pipeline.
That's what's being discussed. At this point, since there's not an actual bill on the table, the negotiation around that, it really has not started at this point. And again, the president and Secretary Liu have been pretty adamant about not wanting to engage in a negotiation in terms of that. I think at this point that's still, I mean, originally Speaker Boehner had always had the doctrine of for every dollar of increase, there'd be a dollar of cuts. The idea may be here in terms of thinking through some other elements that might be more acceptable to the administration, or maybe not. I think, like you're hearing in terms of the CR, it's a really fluid situation.
Mm-hmm. And when does
which again going to your point that you were making earlier, with deadlines in place being this fluid, this close,
right.
Is not necessarily particularly comforting to the American people.
And when, David, does the debt ceiling debate take place in all earnest? Is that next week or the week after?
I don't know the answer. I would think at this point, it'll be soon. I mean, the intent is to have the vote. Dealing with the CR, I believe, tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll go to the Senate. So that would come up pretty soon. Again, to some degree, there's going to have to be a number decided on, just in terms of if you were just going to do this normally, what are you going to raise it to? What is that number? And to some degree, that's where you have Jack Lew, Treasury Secretary, sort of defining what that number should look like and then sort of going from there.
We take phone calls for David Winston. Not only phone calls, we'll take messages as well. We are talking this hour about the this will happen in the House tomorrow. That the story is that the government's going to run out of money. Every federal agency is going to be shut down in about 2 weeks. And what's happened is there's great controversy about getting the money to keep the government open. Some Republicans, more conservative members of the Republican Party in the House, have pushed ahead, and the leadership has embraced this, that they will vote to fund the government but also defund Obamacare at the same time, so the two are quite closely linked at this point. The Senate, of course, will not have that happen, and the president, of course, would not sign such a bill. So we run the risk of the government completely shutting down in a couple of weeks. What's the way out of this? Is there any kind of compromise or not? David did a very interesting poll in which he found that the idea of linking the two is not very popular, even among Republicans. So it's a smaller group of Republicans in the House who are pushing this. What do you think? Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. David Winston is with us this part of the hour. He is president of the Winston Group. And later in the hour, Jonathan Alter will join us, who is a political analyst and author of The Center Holds, Obama and His Enemies. Let's go to phone calls. We have a ton of them that have come in. And we start with Reed in Clintonville. David, hi, Reed.
Yes, hello. Thank you for this opportunity. Hey, I just wanted to comment about the fact that every congressperson and every senator is covered or has the option of a number of health plans, Cadillac health plans, that are subsidized by, I believe, about 75% by the American people. They pay approximately 25% of their monthly health care fee and or premium fee, the insurance premium fee. And yet they want to. There's just a handful of people in the Congress that want to destroy any opportunity that we out here in the hinterlands would have of finding meaningful health care, even before the program has been tested. It's so strange that someone would try to destroy something before it has even. If it doesn't work, we're going to be the ones that are screaming and saying it doesn't work. Let us try it. To me, it just smacks of hatred, bigotry, and racism on the part of this small cadre of Republicans.
Oh, that's an interesting point. Why not let it work? And if it doesn't, everybody will be upset. David?
Well, I think to some degree what you've seen is actually the, and again, this is where the concern has emerged. I mean, the president himself has had to postpone parts of this because of the, again, the business now not having to comply for another year. I think the point that Reed just made in terms of sort of the frustration that you have folks who clearly have their health care taken care of, and then big business gets themselves taken care of, but yet, you know, it's not clear to a lot of individuals in terms of what Walgreens announced yesterday, that they're just basically not going to cover anybody's health insurance and put everybody into exchanges. There are a lot of promises that were made that need to be worked through here in terms of, can you actually keep the insurance plan that you have now? Are you going to actually be able to see your own doctor? A lot of that hasn't been worked through. Clearly, for a lot of folks, may find that that's a difficult moment. Having said that, that's a different policy discussion than for the country in terms of, but do we shut the government down because we're unhappy with where this might end up? Those tend to be two different items. Again, people, if there are problems, let's solve them, which is what the country is really saying. Let's not shut down government.
Mm-hmm. Reed, thanks for your call. Karen in Madison, hi.
Hi. I think the point of defunding this and fighting it so hard relates to the fact that it has the potential to be very successful and relates to the fact that people really want it. Several years ago, Kathleen interviewed a senator who was retiring after many years in the Senate, and he said the point of many people is that they don't want government to work because they don't want people have government. They want everything turned over to business interests, and they gradually defund and make people more and more frustrated with their government, so they'll turn away and look to commercial options. And I think the reason this is being fought so hard is because it might be tremendously successful, and that would kind of spoil that long-term plan. I know this is kind of a conspiracy theory outlook, but there's been a lot written about this.
David.
No, and she certainly represents a group of people in terms of their attitude toward the health care plan, in terms of potentially probably more focused in terms of single payer and moving that direction. I mean, one of the problems that occurred here, and I think that the caller sort of represents this conflict, was that the way this bill was originally passed was not passed with any sense of consensus or even close to bipartisanship. It was clearly a very partisan bill. And that's made implementation and moving forward in terms of just healthcare overall very difficult. Going to the point, Catherine, that you made, yes, it is the law at this point. So obviously there's a process that has to be followed. But I think also that this reflects when something is at this scale passed in that much of a partisan way, this is kind of the aftermath, and it's not particularly pleasant, and it makes it very difficult to implement.
Well, it may also be, and let's explore this for a little bit, too, it may also be the result of a small number of Republicans who have an inordinate amount of power in the House. I mean, obviously, John Boehner isn't very happy about this either. There are people who are being told that from a lot of organizations, I'm sure you've seen what's being written here, that this is a huge issue for very, very conservative Republicans. So if your poll shows that the majority of Republicans think this is a bad idea and the country thinks this is a bad idea, why is this an idea that the House is embracing, David? What's happened here?
Well, that's a really complicated question. Let me see if I can sort of unravel that a little bit. Let me start off with one dynamic that, and I think, and this is not a partisan dynamic, this is just sort of the nature of what just occurred in terms of this process called redistricting. And what redistricting is because of population changes, once every 10 years, all the lines are around the country are redrawn. And what's happened is, via computers, people are able to draw districts that are relatively safe for both parties. And so, for example, I think Larry Sabato today had a piece, or one of the people who worked for him had a piece, where they said that 375 out of the 435 congressional seats are considered safe for their respective parties, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, so that doesn't give you much in the way of competition.
Right.
So what's happening is, for both parties, is the real race is in the primary. And so what's occurring here is what you're watching is that people are more concerned about someone being to their left if you're a Democrat, or to the right if you're a Republican, than what the general electorate looks like. Okay, so that's the first piece. The second piece is given the way politics has sort of evolved in D.C., the Democrats, and look, at one point in time Republicans were doing this as well, so I'm not just singling them out in this particular case, but the idea here is, you know, Republicans are having this difficult situation and Democrats want to be able to highlight that difficulty, so Boehner can't really get any Democratic votes, so he's got to get out of his group 218 out of the 230-some odd that he's got. So that allows 20 to 30 members to basically decide things. And so that's kind of where he's at. He can't get a single Democratic vote, which means he's got to get all the Republican votes, which then gives 20 to 30. And by the way, that Pelosi found herself in situations like that as well when she was Speaker. And that's just the difficulty. It's a difficulty of managing a majority coalition. But I think in this particular situation, because of the just heightened rhetoric that's existing, has just made it that much more difficult.
Karen, thanks for your call. Carl in Madison, hi.
Yes, hello. I wish that the press would stop referring to this small cadre of Republicans as conservative or ultra-conservative. There's nothing conservative about what they're doing. They're radical. They're economic terrorists that are holding the government's purse strings hostage to a very narrow, as the guest was stating, perspective or view, and they're willing to blow the whole thing up or shut the whole thing down if they don't get their way. And I just feel that in the Republican leadership, why would you allow, I understand what he's saying about redistricting, I think he's right on about that, but why would you allow such a small group to just so pollute and so destroy not only your party but the country that you're ostensibly representing? It just strikes me as these people then have ultimate power.
Again, part of the challenge here is how do you govern in this environment? And so if in fact you create a situation within the House where you're going to say, okay, in terms of these 30, they can do whatever they want, that means that with Democrats never voting with you either, you can never get anything passed to the House. And so part of the challenge here is what can you get to the House? Now, I would suggest that what the Speaker clearly did here in terms of passing the bill the way he did is he knows this is just simply the first step here in terms of what's going to be a very several steps. Again, it'll go to the Senate. The Senate will likely take out the Obamacare part, send it to conference, and then that's where the real negotiation is going to occur. So you're just trying to move the process along. Having said that, look, from my perspective, and again, Kathleen, sort of going back to that survey question, one of the things that I tested, I do a question where I ask, you know, just generically, in thinking about the 2040, are you thinking about voting for the Republican or Democratic candidate for Congress? Not it's assigning a name to it, but just generally to see where people's preferences are. Among the people who said the Republican candidate, 50% oppose this idea in terms of shutting down the government, which to me, as someone who thinking through, you know, where do Republicans go? If you're giving half the people who are potentially going to vote for you a reason to disagree, that's probably not a good first step toward looking toward 2014.
Can you tell me, I'm sure you saw the New York Times yesterday, their editorial looked at groups that have been financed with, they say, secret and unlimited money that have been spending more money attacking Republicans than the Democrats are, TV ads, more money for the groups, personal coffers, they say, pointing fingers and attacking Republicans is apparently a very profitable fundraising business.
Well, let's just say that there was another fellow, a fellow by the name of Brian Walsh, who used to be the communications director for the campaign arm for Senate Republicans, who wrote something similar where he basically had said that the two specific groups, Club for Growth and Heritage Action, had actually spent more money attacking Republican candidates than the Democratic National Committee, the Democratic Campaign Committee for the House and the Senate, which are two separate items, which sort of begins to raise the point of, and I think you're seeing the frustration within the party, that if these groups are attacking Republicans more so than Democrats are, where exactly is the political process on the Republican side?
Mm-hmm.
It's creating a very complex moment for the party. Having said that, again, now going back to the fellow just called, or Carl, who just called, I mean, that's what the Speaker is trying to operate within, in terms of given that context, how do you move things forward and govern? Because again, I just go back and we've had this in terms of previous conversations as well. The public wants to elect parties to govern, right? And that's the challenge. And when they start hearing rhetoric like this, the sense is there's some political objective trying to be achieved as opposed to where does the country need to go.
Yeah. One more call and then we'll change guests. Same topic. Steve in Chippewa Falls. Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, Steve.
You know, I hear your callers and I hear a lot of, you know, these are economic terrorists and they're so foolish they won't be reelected. And yet I see that in this recent thing with Syria, they seem to be quite in tune with the American public. And I think that it's their seats to lose. If they stand on their principles and they lose their seats, well, then they lose their seats. And if a crisis happens, the nation isn't going to fall down and go away. This is part of governing. This is the way it works. They want to move us to the right a little bit. I'm kind of a centrist. I voted for Obama twice. But I don't feel like these are somehow evil folks because they're in there, or stupid folks. This is their point, and they have a constituency. And I think that the left has to realize that, and accept, have a big tent where they accept everybody in the country as being able to be part of governance. And I don't hear that a lot on public radio. But I'll hang up and listen unless you have a comment that you want me to comment on.
All right, Steve, you can stay with us for a minute. David?
No, going back to the Syria thing, I think that was an example, sort of across the board, of how things could work in a pretty positive way. Clearly the president thought that he wanted to take some action. He got some support out of the House and the Senate. I'm coming from completely different directions, but there was a lot more opposition as elected officials were listening to their constituents. Ultimately, that support was not there, and the president asked specifically the Congress to endorse the plan, which clearly was not likely to happen. Having said that, that was also a foreign policy issue where both the leadership in the House and the Senate on both sides basically cut their members loose and said, this is a vote of conscience, do what you think is necessary or what you believe is correct here. And in terms of these individuals, part of the challenge here is if you disagree, then figure out how to get your point through in a way that allows the country to be governed. And I think that the question is, that's developing here is this a question that has gotten to a point that the country is so much behind it that that shutting down the government is a reasonable step given the differences in terms of the issue and what the public is saying? Again, I emphasize that generally the public is unhappy with this plan by about a 10-point margin, but they haven't decided that it's reached that scale that shutting down the government is an acceptable step to resolve it.
Mm-hmm. David, thank you ever so much, as always, for being with us.
Yep. Pleasure.
David Winston, our guest this part of the program, he is president of the Winston Group, and we are going to continue our conversation. Jonathan Alter joining us momentarily. Jonathan is a reporter, a historian, a columnist. His latest book is The Center Holds, Obama and His Enemies. He has written for The New York Times, Washington Post, Washington Monthly, Atlantic, New Yorker. The list goes on. Has been an analyst and contributing correspondent for NBC News and MSNBC. He'll be joining us momentarily on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jonathan Alter is here now. We're continuing our conversation. Same topic as last week, that the government is about to be shut down in 2 weeks, actually, unless there can be an agreement to keep the government open. The House has voted to tie funds for Obamacare to a government staying open, and that's not acceptable, of course, to the president or to Senates in the Democratic senators and some Republican senators as well. So what's the future and why is this happening? Jonathan is with us now. Hey, Jonathan, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
How much of this is tied to money? I was just getting into this with David. When you look at very conservative groups who have the Club for Growth, the Koch brothers, Heritage Action, who have been making sure that members of the House and senators vote a certain way and they have to vote to defund Obamacare or else they face a loss of money. Would this be happening at all if we didn't have these kind of groups giving people whole lots of money so they could be reelected?
No, it wouldn't be happening at all, because if you look at the polls, and politicians do look at the polls and often follow the polls when the money's not on the other side, the polls show that while the public is split on Obamacare, especially on the mandates that require people to buy health insurance, which are unpopular, while they're split on the overall idea of Obamacare, they overwhelmingly oppose the idea of holding the government hostage to defunding or even delaying Obamacare, and they would overwhelmingly blame the Republicans who committed this act of political blackmail. And if you don't believe me, you might believe Karl Rove, who just wrote a column making this point in the Wall Street Journal, in which he pleaded with Republicans not to pursue this strategy.
So why are they? What's in it for what Republicans who will benefit from this strategy? I don't quite get it.
Well, they're in the grip, and now, to a certain extent, the country's in the grip of a radical ideology. This is about ideology more than politics as we kind of conventionally understand it. These are folks, many of whom were elected in 2010, who are really, if you look at them, as I try to in the center hold on a kind of a historical continuum, they're radicals. This is not your father's GOP. You know, this is a different breed of cat, and they are very radical, and they want to roll back a lot of, you know, what they consider to be the welfare state and the social contract that's existed in this country since the Great Depression, and they don't believe in it. Now, does that mean that, you know, there aren't legitimate criticisms of Obamacare? This argument that they're making is not really about Obamacare. It's about the whole notion of compromise and governance.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, you know, the reason that I wrote my most recent book was that after the 2010 election, John Boehner gave an interview to Leslie Stahl on 60 Minutes. And John Boehner is not a radical. He is, an old-fashioned Republican, very familiar kind of figure. But he realized that his speakership, which he was just stepping into, was dependent on these radicals, Tea Party, whatever you want to call them. And he said, in answer to Leslie Stahl's question about whether he believed in compromise, excuse me, he said, "I don't believe in the, excuse me." He said, "I don't believe in that. We don't like to use that word compromise."
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw that, kind of sat up in my chair, maybe I coughed the way I just did. I said, excuse me, yelling at my television set, the country was founded on compromise. That is the essence of what a democracy is you give a little, you don't hold the other side hostage, you don't hold the full faith and credit of the United States hostage, you don't do certain things unless you are radical.
Mm-hmm.
And so I concluded that I was going to write a book about this, because if these elements succeeded, which they did not in 2012, that we would be living in a different kind of country.
Mm-hmm. So when you're a historian as well, mm-hmm. when you respond to what the president said yesterday, that you have never seen in the history of the United States the debt ceiling or the threat of not raising the debt ceiling being used to extort a president or a governing party. Do we have a historical framework for this, Jonathan?
That's actually what he said is not accurate. There has been some negotiation about the debt ceiling when it's needed to be raised on several occasions. Democrats and Republicans have used the debt ceiling, but they use it as a kind of a negotiating, bargaining chip in the standard sort of budget negotiations that go on in Washington. Where he's right, what's never really happened before 2011 is a political party going out into Times Square, wrapping full faith and credit of the United States in dynamite and saying, if you don't do everything our way, we're going to blow you to kingdom come.
Hmm.
That has not happened in the past. So the president's right about that. He's not right that it's never been used for some kind of negotiation.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not a sense that they're really negotiating here. They're,
right.
They're making demands that can't be met. But for more progressive listeners, I think what they need to understand is that none of this has consequences that would lead to, rolling back Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the chances of repealing Obamacare or even defunding Obamacare are not small. They're non-existent. They're
mm-hmm.
not 1%. They're 0%.
Mm-hmm.
And because the president holds the veto pen, and not only are there not 21 Democrats that the Republicans would need in the Senate to override a veto, there's not one Democrat who would go along with them. So they have zero chance of doing this.
So what's the point then?
The point is that if you're a radical and you're imbued by your ideology, by your anti-government ideology, and you're supported by other radicals who have a lot of money, and your constituents are not going to punish you because they're extremely conservative and your districts have been drawn in such a way that, you know, any more moderate voters have largely been excluded from your congressional district, then why not do this? You look like you're raising the flag for for these issues, and, you know, you sound very forthright and impressive at town meetings.
Mm-hmm.
The only language that any member of Congress or any politician understands is elections. And they, in the case of 2012, Democrats got 1.1 million more votes for Congress, setting aside the presidency, for Congress, 1.1 million more votes than Republican candidates, but Republicans control 55% of the seats in the House of Representatives because of gerrymandering, the way the maps were drawn. Unfortunately for Democrats, Republicans had a very big year in 2010, and that happened to be a census year. So they drew these maps in such a way that in state legislatures that it's tough for Democrats to compete in those districts, and that gives them the freedom to say anything they want without fear of political consequences. So that's in the center holds. That's what I tried to do, was explain how we got to this strange path.
We are at a strange path. Let me welcome phone calls too. Jonathan Alter is our guest this half hour of the program, and we're talking about linking whether or not we fund the government to whether or not Obamacare is funded. You probably know the debate right now, but this is getting, you know, to the point where in a couple weeks there'll be a government shutdown, which is huge. And then we got the debt ceiling after that as well. So we're looking at why this is happening. And I want to ask Jonathan about negotiations here, too. If you've got something that you can't negotiate about, what happens as a result? Are we closer to a shutdown because of this? Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And you can also, we have a Twitter account, and that's @KDunnShow. Jonathan, and also remind me to ask him about this before we say goodbye, because I love these kinds of shows. And I didn't know about this. He's an executive producer of Alpha House, which is a political comedy. And I believe I'll ask you now. One episode has aired. Is that right, Jonathan? What is this?
I'm actually talking to you from the studio where we're shooting Alpha House, which is at Kaufman Astoria Studios in Queens, where the Cosby Show and the Marx Brothers shot, and it's created by Gary Trudeau of Bloomsbury fame.
Uh-huh.
And it stars John Goodman, Cynthia Nixon, Wanda Sykes, Clark Johnson, Mark Consuelos. It's about four Republican senators who live in a man cave on Capitol Hill, and it's airing on Amazon. And you can right now, if you subscribe to Amazon Prime, you can watch the pilot, which aired in May, and we're shooting 10 more episodes that will be available starting later this fall. We're only partway through. We're working on episode 5 right now. We're shooting downstairs from where I'm talking to you.
Oh, this is fun. I love watching those kinds of shows, so I'll go there immediately. Let's go to phone calls for you. Jonathan Alter is with us. Wayne in Holman. Hi, Wayne.
Haven't talked to you for a while.
I know, Wayne. Kathleen. Hi, how are you?
Good to talk to you, kid.
You as well.
Quick question for your learned guests, and I'm really enjoying this. I'm a staunch conservative Republican, but I don't particularly like what some of these folks are doing. I don't believe in shutting down the government to make a point. I don't agree with Obamacare, but that's beside the point. My question to the guest, and he's a pretty knowledgeable fellow, but in his mind, is there such a thing as radical Democrats, and is there such a thing as high rollers in the Democrat Party? I know we're concentrating on the Republican and their high roller donors, but to be fair in the conversation, it got to work both ways, doesn't it?
It's a great question, and I think that the caller represents a lot of Republicans I've talked to, including some in my own family, who don't like Obamacare, but they don't want to see the government held hostage and shut down and that kind of thing. So what happened in the Democratic Party was that there were radical Democrats. I think we all remember them from the 1970s. And then, you know, after the 1984 election, when Reagan won in a landslide and, you know, was reelected in a landslide, the Democrats had a reckoning. And I think this is something that it would be good for the not just the Republican Party, but for the whole country if the Republicans could go through this. And the Democrats recognized, you know, we really can't go down this road with people like, you know, Dennis Kucinich would be a kind of a modern day example of that. Or there was a congressman from California named Ron Dellums. Jesse Jackson ran for president and you know, got a lot of votes. The Democratic Party recognized this just isn't going to work for us. And so they moved to the center, and Bill Clinton was the result. And, you know, whatever one thinks of Bill Clinton, he's not a radical. And that then became the tone of the Democratic Party. Now, part of what happened with that is that they did develop a big money component on the Democratic side, and some real Democratic high rollers like George Soros and people like that who gave lots of money in the same way that not nearly as much as Sheldon Adelson, who gave $100 million in 2012. George Soros in 2004 gave, I believe it was, less than $20 million, but still a lot of money. But then something really interesting happened in 2012 that I devote some space to in The Center Holds, and that is that Obama and his people in Chicago figured out how to crack the code on internet fundraising. So the average donation to Barack Obama in 2012 was $66, and the average donation to Mitt Romney was $1,100.
Oh my goodness!
So there was a big gap opened up on the money front. The Democrats, Obama raised $1 billion, and a fair amount of that was from high rollers, bundlers, people who, you know, figured out ways to collect a lot of money from their friends, and they have a lot of influence in the Democratic Party. But it's not dependent entirely on those guys the way the Republicans currently are.
Thanks, Wayne, for the call. Let's go to Kurt in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Kurt.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Alter, do you know, is there anything in the Constitution that would allow the president to declare some sort of domestic national emergency and govern without the having to deal with the subversives in Congress, Republican subversives?
Not really. There really isn't, because, you know, the Constitution is very respectful of the Congress, and that has always been the people's branch. And our Constitution was drafted, not long after independence in reaction to the abuses of the British Crown. And so it's interesting you raise this in that an earlier book I wrote, it's called The Defining Moment, FDR's 100 Days in the Triumph.
Yeah, I love that book.
And this book details what Roosevelt did in 1933. And there were a lot of people who wanted him to declare himself a dictator and say that the Depression was so severe when he was sworn in that he would assume wartime powers. And he was tempted to do it, and he drafted a speech, which I discovered for the first time in the archives at the Roosevelt Library, where he took upon himself the wartime powers. And dictator was a positive word then. It was even a car that Studebaker built called the Dictator that was popular. So a lot of people wanted him to do this. It was before it was the year Hitler came to power, but before he was really understood. And Mussolini was popular. And Roosevelt decided not to take those dictatorial powers and to work instead with Congress. And he got Congress to go along. And then when he did try for a power grab with the court packing scheme in 1937, he got slapped down. So Obama really can't do that. There is some constitutional option that allows him, under some interpretations on this question of the national debt, to unilaterally, by himself, raise the debt ceiling. And Bill Clinton wanted him to do it. And I tell the story in the center holds of why Obama didn't do it in the summer of 2011, the last time the Republicans threatened this. And the reason is because we had a debt ceiling crisis, and he didn't want to lay a constitutional crisis on top of that. Mm. And the Supreme Court, it would have taken them weeks to weigh in, and the economy would have cratered in the meantime, and he just didn't want to have a big constitutional crisis. So instead, he took a political bruising a couple of summers ago that he was able to recover from.
Jonathan, thank you so much. We're out of time. Good luck on the show. We'll all see you.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, our pleasure. Jonathan Alter, now executive producer of Alpha House. You can see that on Amazon Prime, and there will be 10 episodes. Don't you love those shows? I watch him. I just sort of sit down and watch four at a time. And he is author of The Center Holds, Obama and His Enemies. Rhonda Fanning and KP Whaley produced this program. The story, of course, to be continued. Rest assured, we'll talk about it on All Things Political on Monday.